This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigway, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manaquisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Everybody, welcome to the latest in the ongoing professional and academic journey that is the AdNonTech Podcast. With us, as ever, myself, Dr. Matt Stranick, and the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed. You're wearing a CFL shirt. You want to shout that out from the get-go here, friend? For those who are watching the video as opposed to listening, Doug is sporting a very sharp CFL jersey.
Yeah, after a long winter of nothing to yell at on the television, the Calgary Stampeders and the Canadian Football League play the first preseason game today. So I thought, why not?
Radical. You know, going anecdotally here just a bit, I actually, in terms of like professional value or value on your professional sports dollar, a CFL game, wow. I've been to a couple over the years, and boy, oh boy, you know, for $50, like you can get like good seats actually, you know, and it's just like, it's just a party. It's super fun. You know, I don't necessarily watch it televised per se. But like if I'm in Calgary or Vancouver and I have the opportunity to check it out, preferably with my kids, it's something I wouldn't pass up. So that's rad, man.
Yeah, I've been a season ticket holder in Edmonton and Calgary.
Wow.
And it was the same thing. I really don't watch it on TV, but I like being in a crowd and being part of that joint community.
It's like minor league hockey for me. Like, you know, I'm not like a huge NHL watcher per se, but, and I was thinking when you mentioned like, you don't have anything to yell about. Okay. So you don't really follow the NHL then that much if you don't have something to yell about at the TV. I mean, that's.
I used to follow it, and now I feel like it's just rigged. I feel like it is entirely set up for the TV companies to make as much money as possible.
That's true. I guess like any of the professional sports markets are sort of like, they're like, how can we get as much content as possible onto as many screens, right? And it kind of,
that's it,
maybe dilutes the whole product, you could say. But I would argue, folks, apparently we're talking about professional sports. I will finally say, before we get really into the crux of the matter, is that NBA is something I can watch on TV, like, no problem. If you want to talk about, like, just a league that knows exactly how to deliver a superior product that you can watch on TV, or through other formats. Shout out to, I don't know who the league president is at the moment, but anyways, sports, good Lord. Dude, what are we talking about today besides sports?
I wanted to talk about podcasting and, EdTech.
Okay.
Because I was looking at it, and we've talked about how we built our podcast, and we have, throughout episodes, we've talked about how we put it together and why we're doing it and all that. But I realized we never dove into podcasting in general in education. So I thought, hey, let's do that. And I found a theme in the podcast that I listen to. So there's a list in the show notes that it has a whole bunch. And initially when I looked at it, I was like, oh, these are just the ones I'm interested in. And like, I walk my dogs every day for at least an hour. And I put the little video, the 30-second videos up on Instagram and stuff.
Which are awesome.
Thanks. Thanks. And I normally have a podcast playing. So when we get to that list later on, we can talk about that a little more.
That's cool. And if I may, just like what you're describing, it's sort of, we've talked variously on the show about like the notion of like personal education infrastructure, right? And everybody has like pretty specific, media consumption preferences generally. So when we're talking about podcasting, I mean, I think it's nice to sort of contextualize that within sort of the broader media ecosystem, if I can think of it that way. So just because when you were speaking, Doug, to kind of speak directly to what your point was, like as we kind of discuss during the preamble, I don't follow podcasts. I'm heavily, clearly involved in this one, obviously, and the music one. And in fact, that takes up, I don't know, if I was doing two episodes to start to finish and I put them out, both out from everything, I mean, it's a good 3 or 4 hours each, which to me is great. I was employed. I was employed up until Thursday, and at which point my job involved so much screen time that, so it's like, well, why don't you watch TV? Well, I stare at screens all day. Well, why don't you watch a movie? Well, I stare at screens all day. Well, like, why don't you listen to, podcasts? It's like, I am listening to music as often as I can. My mom, on the other hand, she can't even stand listening to music on the radio. My mom is all about audiobooks. My mom reads like 3 or 4 books a week, I want to say, in the audiobooks. So again, like, let's differentiate between a podcast and an audiobook, right? So, and then what you're describing, right? I mean, podcasts are just part of your thing when you're out walking your dog. Whereas, I'm just like, life is too short not to be listening to punk music as often as you can, is kind of my overall stance with media generally. So I just found it interesting to kind of dial it into the whole personal infrastructure notion that we kind of talked about before. That's a very long-winded way of what I was thinking when you were speaking there, bud.
Yeah, I like that whole concept of PEI, personal educational infrastructure. So I'd like to jump into the first article I found, Campbell, 2005, Podcasting and Education from Educause. And this is the earliest academic article I could find. And I went digging. So this is November, December 2005. And one of their comments is, imagine a liberal arts university supplying its community and the world with profcasts of classes and presentations delivered by its talented instructors. And profcast is not a term that I have seen continued. So that is
my first encounter as an ed tech practitioner of some years experience with that particular term, profcast. I don't know.
Yeah.
Educause is good stuff, by the way, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Everything Educause does, you can say, well, it's geared a little bit, maybe it's too watered down, or maybe it's geared more towards private interests and industry a little bit more than you'd want. But honestly, they have such a range of resources They have so many people like that they just consult with, that everything they do kind of has this really professional quality. But then, you know, when they go to these white papers or these kind of articles, I mean, again, this is like a single sourced author, but I mean, a lot of the stuff they put out is just, it's really just because of who they bring it out to. It sort of bears a certain breadth and a certain professional value in these kinds of things. So anyway, dude, do enjoy the Educause reference. Please continue, my friend.
So I need to jump back. I realized that we're talking about podcasting, yep. And I didn't describe the origin of the word.
Oh,
so okay. Why did we come up with podcast? Pod is actually personal on demand cast. So, and it was right when iPods and I think it's pre-Zoom, but devices that you could download, get the RSS feed and download the stuff to your phone or your device or, sorry, not phone. It was definitely device. But it was, so it's personal on demand. That's where the pod part comes from. And some people don't know that. I just lived it and I just assumed everybody knew it.
So I didn't know that. I had hoped that it was a reference somehow to the first Breeders LP, Pod, produced by Steve Albini. I'm shoehorning as more references into about Steve Albini into this episode as well, just since absolutely nobody asked. Pod, okay, personal on demand. That's I did not know that, sir.
Now we do. Well, if nothing else, that's the thing for today.
I'm sure this is only one of such many tidbits and or bon mots. Bon mots is French, which means nice words, right?
Okay, now I was going to write that down as the phrase of the podcast, but I couldn't figure out how to spell that first word, so we'll have to come up with a different one. What's interesting, this is 19 years ago that this article came out, and it is the first that I could find. And I don't have to imagine universities supplying to its community presentations delivered by the instructors, right? That's a thing now. That is just a thing, but they didn't stay in podcast form. They just kind of slid into the learning management system, or it's part of the class, or it's on TikTok or Instagram or something. I don't know, man. But they didn't head there. Go ahead. What do you got?
Just anytime I hear the word TikTok, I'm just like, oh God, this is the distinguishing line between me and, like, you know, what do you call it? Like, there's the Gen X people and the millennial people a bit, and I'm sort of on that weird little line, that weird little precipice, right? Sort of between late Gen X and early millennial. We don't really have our own thing. But like the cutoff point, I think, for like people who are kind of my age generationally and people who are, you know, I would consider just, they're a different generation than me, younger, right? Whatever that is. Mm-hmm. TikTok is one of the key distinguishing, like, the people, if you're using that, you have a different culture, you have a different set of experiences and values, I would say. I tried to explain that to my kid in a shorthand kind of version, and I don't think it went over, but anyway, sorry. You say TikTok, I have a tirade. That's what happened, my friends.
That's fine. So my next article is by Reed, Kirvin, Vardy, and Hindle. In 2006. And it's about, we've got the iPods, but where do we start? And I'm the Reed in that Reed. That was my first podcasting article. So I was a couple of months behind the curve on the very first one.
Okay.
And I think it was the end of March. I had to have that article into the conference. But anyway, long story short, I was only a few months behind the curve that time. I've been much more behind the curve since then. But
being behind the curve is actually the new being ahead of the curve. That's orange is the new black, something to that effect. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, man.
So one line that I put in there is, while the usage of iPods, podcasts, and other on-demand technologies continues to affect society, it appears that educational settings have not yet adapted to accommodate their use in classrooms. And I'm looking back 18 years later thinking, that's still the case. We still haven't got there.
So, well, it's interesting that, you know, you put in that term in the classroom, because to me, in 18 years, my thinking is that what the notion of a classroom even is has now undergone a pretty significant amount of change. So, for instance, just to speak to, you know, folks, I have to speak to this. So I am just going to sort of punch in a little bullet point here. My job recently was eliminated. And what I was told, you know, with all respect, was that there had been a strategic shift away from e-learning, right? And so that sort of, to me, is in keeping with the salient point that's here, you know? So, like, the classroom setting, like, what is it? It's something that has to be defined. So in the organization that I was hired for, they were dealing with, like, a post-pandemic context wherein they had spent a lot of time, you know, post-pandemic, trying to figure out how to, you know, regularize a lot of their training, a lot of their key stuff. But we've gotten actually now far away. So what do you call it? Post-pandemic, where, you know, just due to certain, you know, strategic imperatives, the organization determines, recently articulated it, I should say, recently articulated that they are now honing back in on in-person classroom, physically, you know, delivered training. And in my world, I go, okay, you can have that and you can have robust e-learning around it and supporting it. But, you know, that feeling is not, you know, shared among my former employer. So, again, it's sort of every time you talk about classroom, even, it's like, well, what are the factors there? You know, what's the supporting e-learning infrastructure? What's the in-class media, right, with the cameras and, you know, like the chalk? What's the state of the chalk or the whiteboard even? It's all sort of part of a whole. So for podcasts to still be this kind of untapped phenomenon in that wider space, it's like, it's kind of cool. It gives us the opportunity that we have with this podcast, yeah, where, again, even just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, we had a new cohort of students from Thompson Rivers with Dr. Pam Gurney's class coming in and checking out some of the episodes, including the previous semester's Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion episode that Hassan and I did, Dr. Arath and myself, right? So this stuff, which it was ostensibly, you know, meant to just be you and I talking with a certain audience, has now been recontextualized as part of a quote unquote classroom curricular endeavor relative to our former employer, our mutual former employer. Shout out to all the former employers back there, but most especially a shout out to future employers. I think we mentioned it the last time. This is really my last point on this tirade. Corporate interests, we would be pleased to do your seminar and or professional development training, preferably in person, preferably with hospitality suite and business class travel, but, you know, not necessarily. You can email us. The email address is on the website, folks. Dude, I'm sorry. It's been a week.
Oh, I know. I know. I had a week too. Not your week, but I had a week as well.
Yeah. Folks, happy Saturday wherever you are. And may your cup of whatever you're sipping always be filled. Are we on to still on the wall? Are we still on this 2010 one, friends? So I kind of steered us away from that. Yeah,
we're just about to start it.
Okay.
So there's a podcasting and education article. Are students ready and eager as we think they are? And it's Walls, Cusero, Walker, AC, McVaughn, and Robinson.
Et al.
Yeah, so it's Walls et al. Is what it's going to be moving forward.
Yeah.
But one of the neat things, so this is a couple of years later. This is 2010. This is 4 or 5 years after things have started to roll. And one thing we figured out is that if students don't utilize or don't realize the benefits of the self-pacing multimedia characteristics of podcasting, then it's just adding to cognitive overload. It's just crazy. It's one more thing to learn. One more thing of why are we doing this? It's one more thing that's just not working.
I agree with that sentiment.
It reminds me of years ago. I was working and I had just started a new job, and I was reformatting some document, and my coworker, his name is Dave. He's amazing. Still amazing all these years later. He's like, why are you doing that? Why don't you just do the format painter? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And it was one of those little things in Word where you click the little paintbrush and it changes all that to look like this. And it's like, oh, I spent so much time not knowing that existed. I didn't realize the functionality and what the benefits could have been. And it's just one of those things. It's like, this changed my life once I had somebody step in and realize it.
Minutes adding up to like hours of your life, literally. That's kind of like the hallway kind of knowledge. That's kind of like what got me interested in ed tech, even as a thing. Like after my B.Ed program, I was like, okay, you know, it's a thing that's kind of interesting, but I didn't really see the value of it until I was sort of started experimenting with wikis as sort of a classroom kind of initiative, and having discussions to that effect with people in my hallway. So again, what you're describing, community of practice, I think, somewhat loosely applies to those ad hoc kind of exchanges of knowledge within the workplace, right? So that's awesome, man.
It helps when you have an open mind.
Yeah. Too,
because people with a closed mind already know everything. People with an open mind are like, cool, I can use that. Here's how I'll do that, whatever that happens to be.
Always on the lookout for new cognitive tools and approaches, for sure.
It's like when you buy a package of Legos, right? Some people are going to go through the instruction book and build the exact thing, and other people are going to build and be imaginative. It depends where you're headed. I see benefits to both sides of that, and something in the middle too. So,
well, I think there's a you're speaking to like the opportunity in any program of study to balance out, shall we say, quote unquote, lower, intermediate, and higher order learning outcomes, right? Like you go, okay, this is complex subject matter. How do we sort of achieve this high-end learning and or training result, these objectable behaviors? Well, I mean, any good instructional design process is typically going to have you break it down into smaller component actions and processes, and then train each of those individually. And then in so breaking it out, you can then have a process which is then transferable, right? But again, the point is having a range, not just like, okay, here's this super high level thing that we have no scaffolding for, right? To use constructivist jargon. the zone of proximal development will not be adequately fulfilled, right, under such circumstances, and therefore leading to crash and burn results, ultimately affecting the learner sense of self-efficacy. And without sense of self-efficacy as a learner, I can tell you, it's going to be a very challenging enterprise.
That's it. Now, it's funny because I don't remember in all my reading Vygotsky ever mentioning crash and burn. but you're so right.
It's the tightrope walker, right? Above Times Square in 1920s. It's like, hopefully there's like a net below there, but you can't tell from the picture, right? Anyway.
That's it. And it's part of the scaffolding that comes from constructivism and constructionism is making sure people know that the opportunity's there. Like, I had just glazed over that format painter button. It was like, that's been added since I learned Word. I don't care. Because Word, those guys get paid by the application, right? It's like, oh, look, here's a new thing you can do. And we talked about that previously, where they used to, the project teams used to get their bonuses based on how many new things they could add. They never asked, name two people that would ever use that. It was always, oh, now you can do, and it's like, no regular user's doing that. Make that an add-in pack or something.
I think we have an opportunity to mention the Pareto principle here, in as much as 80% of most usage of, say, Microsoft Word comes from 20% of the features. So then what do you have the rest of this massive corporate enterprise doing, you know, besides just sort of ensuring that you have regular need for software updates instead of just building the damn thing properly? That's like, well, let's just get something that's 80% ready out of people, and then we'll just have them patch the shit out of it until our next generation major release comes out. Sort of like, geez, it's almost like they want to just have you spending $400 on completely new software every 3 or 4 years if you can, for instance. But then you have these project teams like, okay, so 80% of this program isn't getting much play. Let's just throw Skunkworks kind of projects at it. And because you never know, right? Like, maybe usage will just go viral, right, on a particular obscure feature, and then suddenly that changes the whole dang 80-20 ratio, Pareto principle. I'm a fan. It's a helpful conceptual tool. Anyway, yeah, dude.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
One thing with the Pareto principle is I've never seen that really work well with student learning. I just haven't. Students can't say 80% of the concept is good enough.
if I got 80%, that's like considered an A- on a lot of things. I mean, I don't know.
not on pass fail stuff. It's like, boy,
okay,
oh boy.
Well,
I know 80% of the stuff to fly an airplane. The only thing I don't know is how to land.
I'm an excellent surgeon, except that I can't administer anesthetic, and you're going to feel everything as I take out your spleen. Spleen supreme. That's a high school poem a friend of mine wrote. It's literally, Mike Beattie, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not. Spleen supreme. God, I want to eat your spleen. Fredericton High School's finest creative writing students. Let me tell you. Good Lord, dude.
Sounds
happy
like
Saturday, folks. Yeah.
So we jumped ahead a little bit for the next one, Forbes and Co. for 2015, Voice Over Distance. And it's a case for podcasting for learning. An online teacher ed, and this is out of New Zealand, and I love New Zealand, so I try to drop New Zealand.
I love the idea of New Zealand. I would love, like, I love everything that I think of when I think of New Zealand. I'm sure they friggin' did terrible things to, you know, Indigenous and First Nations, but within the context of existing rich country in the early 21st century, they have that really, I don't know, is she still prime minister, that young woman who was like, she was in her 20s when she got elected, right?
I don't know.
Small population, God. Living in New Zealand is probably a lot, and living like as close to Australia as they do, I sort of wonder if that's sort of like Canada, smaller, more whatever country, right beside much larger, you know, with more people, much more viable economic thing, whatever.
I was there 21 years ago and had that exact conversation with a local. I stayed on a farm stay where I spent 2 weeks living on this person's farm. And it was like a hotel B&B kind of thing. And it was the same conversation. And he said, you guys actually have it better. He said, Canadians have it better because not only do we have Australia right next to us, we still deal with the UK. So we have both of those big cultures coming down on them. And he said, basically, you only have the United States of America coming down on you. And it's like, yeah, okay, fair enough. But we got along really well because we both came from, we're the younger cousin kind of thing, and dealing with the older, more established cultures.
Right.
Anyway, and to be honest, my wife is in New Zealand right now, and she just sent me pictures of one of the sets from Lord of the Rings. She was in Hobbiton, where they did all the filming, and now it's a little tourist area and stuff. I got them about 3 hours ago. And
way to go, Aaron.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very, very cool.
Is Aaron on work or personal travel?
No. She's working. She is working. But it's Saturday, Sunday there now? It's what, they're 13 hours or 15 hours ahead or something. So she's got a weekend off, but otherwise she's on the job.
And she sent you pictures of Hobbiton. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, because I'm a big nerd. Is our podcast named similarly to the walking tree shepherds of the forest, the Ents? Just maybe.
I think it's neat, that's all. I just think it's a cool graphic, you know.
Me too. I took a long time to find that graphic and create it. I love it. Anyway, I want to get to Forbes & Co. And what they did is, again, undergrad education study. And they put podcasting tasks into the class and into the research that they were doing with these teachers that were going into classrooms to do their practice teaching. And it was a chance for the lecturers, the tutors, and the students to all learn and share with one another. And it gave them the opportunity to feel more comfortable doing independent inquiry into technology use to support their pedagogy. And they did it right. It was, how do we use this technology tool and this technique and this practice and this result to help my pedagogy with my students? So it was just, it was so nicely put together, and I'm absolutely biased because this is exactly my thoughts on things. This is how you have to do it. The pedagogy and students come first. How do we help? How do we make it better? So
awesome.
I just loved that article, and that was 2015, so that was 9 years ago now, but
relatively recent. I mean, yeah, close enough, right?
It's basically halfway through the lifespan of podcasts. Because podcasts are about 20, and this was about 10, so it's kind of in the middle where it's all going.
Awesome!
I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I can see why, and I endorse the location of it on the show and within the notes.
So my last one is a big difference the rest of these have been about the podcasting and the pedagogy and educators and all this. And Sullivan 2019 is talking about the platforms of podcasting, which I found interesting because I lived it back in the day. And this was about all the hosting services, because if I remember you and I going back and forth how many times about where are we going to put it, how is it going to get hosted, where are we going to share, like all of those behind-the-scenes conversations that we may or may not have shared on other episodes. And what's really cool is Sullivan talks about open. What does an open platform mean? Because open is one of those words, right? Always seems to have quotes around it. What do they mean? Is it free? Is that what open is? Is it easy to create? Is it easy to store? Is it easy to distribute? How much technical knowledge do you need to have? Or is it bounded? Is there walls? Like, I don't know if you've ever gone bowling and they put up the bumper walls so your ball can't go into the ditch.
Right.
They bounded it in certain ways. It's like, I don't want to understand the algorithm any more than I already do. I just don't. I don't want to understand a lot of the data stuff, right? Like, you know, those little pop-ups that come up for, oh, your cookies. I'm clicking yes, just accept all most of the time. I don't want to dig into that detail. And with the way these platforms are designed, I don't have to. It makes it easier for me. But they had a nice little graphic about percentage of all podcasts, and they used Apple Podcasts because it was.
Well, I was just looking at that. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And some of these I remember from back in the day. A bunch of these do not exist anymore.
What kind of grabbed my attention on this, apart from the fact simply that love a good table in any circumstances for data representation. So 2019, I mean, we're only talking 5 years, which I realize in tech years is a lot. But way down here, number 11, blueberry.com. Okay, so that's the plugin that we use. Blueberry, with that spelling, exists as the plugin which we use in the WordPress environment. And that's like the widget. I just look at it like, okay, you download the plugin, you enable all the functionality. And then at the end of putting everything into the WordPress entry, so putting in the YouTube video clip, putting in the audio clip, placing it all within a post in the WordPress environment, then at the very bottom, because of the existence of the plugin, the installation of it, there's just some extra fields. It's just metadata, right? So you put a link to your audio, like the path to the audio file where it's saved in your site with a unique URL. And then you put a custom title, custom piece of artwork. And that's actually it. Because then when you just do the regular publication of the WordPress post, it then just sort of vis-a-vis through the plugin makes its way to Spotify, Google, and all the other places that it goes, which I mean, I don't know necessarily how much of our percentage audience or like what the analytics look like on the audio side. I just, you know, it's to speak to your point. You don't want to know how it works. I'm like, if I really wanted to, take a dive into who our audience is and how to maximize engagement with those individuals through, you know, each of the affordances of those individual spots, I mean, I could do that. We could go into that, which I'm suitably between employment gigs right now. So God help us. I could potentially get into that. I don't know that I'm gonna, but you know what I mean? It's just like, you know, so down there from 5 years ago, 1.4% of all podcasts are actually through that, whatever that software even existed as at the time. I'd be curious to know what it is now, just anecdotally. But
and I couldn't
actually find out.
I dug in and couldn't find it. And then I thought, And then you sent me that message saying, hey, what are the episode notes? And it's like, oh, that's a perfect time to cut it off. I'm going to cut it off. But I find some of this interesting because the old ones, they played with the word pod so much, like some of the like Pod-O-Matic and Podbean.
Podbean still exists.
Oh, yeah. And that's an older one from back in the day. Then there's ones like Podcast Pickle that didn't make the list that I always remember. I always loved Podcast Pickle. But part of what I loved about these hosting services is how they've made it easier. Because I remember back in the day messing with RSS feeds and trying to set the RSS feed up so people could interact and download and stuff. And one thing Sullivan talks about is they ring the panic bell for you don't want consolidation of services. It's better for people if there's a whole wide list of different hosting services. You don't want there to be two. You don't want two gorillas in the room or one gorilla in the room in a monopoly, because then you're stuck with whatever.
That's a very good point. Very, very good point. Don't keep all your ed tech eggs in one ed tech basket, folks.
Yeah. So I'm very happy to talk about those. I enjoyed digging into this because I realized we've gone back and we've said it previously where if we don't write it down, right, people don't remember. And I just assumed people had my history with podcasts. And it's an ed tech or a non-ed tech kind of show. So one thing I wanted to share was the first picture. There's a bunch of interesting little pictures in there. There's one I think you'll really like. So if people go to the website, analogtrope.com/podcast or oios.ca/ent. We have two different ways to get to the podcast to see the pictures. There's a first one. This first picture is class podcasts. And this is what I could find. One of the shots I had left over from that very first podcast I published back in 2006.
Awesome.
And we had a bunch of stuff in there.
Radical.
And I just enjoyed it. And I thought, oh, look, I found it. Perfect. Let's put that in there. So this is what a podcast hosted page looked like 18 years ago. And I'm wondering if, as you flip through the rest of these images, do you have one that I think you might enjoy?
Oh, well, I mean, I just, the octopus. There's a picture of an octopus with headphones and a mic. And I mean, again, I'm just like the Gloctopus. I got the Gloctopus just a few weeks back. It's still fewer than a month ago. And I'm just like, hey, Mr. Gloctopus, blow something up. It gives me mirth. It gives me mirth. And as we mentioned before, Doug is one of about 9 or 12 or 8 people who I send just random things on Instagram on the regular. I just assume people will block me at a certain point or just tell me not to send these things. But one of them that I found was really cool was just any of these little nature clips, like, of an octopus, just like, it's brilliant. Those things are like just friggin' brilliant. It's like they change color while they move. They're like hoovering up food in the small particles around them while they move. They're just like, you know, disguising themselves as a seafloor or anything they touch, moving quickly, turning themselves into something like that can be as flat as, you know, a meter, a couple meters if they lay their body out, or smaller than a friggin' tennis ball to hide, to evade predators. It's just absolutely brilliant. My mom watched a show like on Netflix, my Octopus Teacher. Apparently that's actually a show where, you know, an investigation between a human subject and don't know, a confined octopus. Good Lord, dude. The octopus and I got feelings about the octopus. That's what I'll say there. Some of these other bits are cool, too.
Oh, yeah. What I'd like to jump into, because what I've done is I have a list of my favorite podcasts right now.
Awesome.
My current favorite podcast. And I asked you if you had a list of favorite podcasts.
And
you have two.
Yeah, I got two. The two podcasts that I am aware of. I'm like anytime I do show notes or whatever, I will make a conscientious effort to go, okay, here's a particular thing. Or, you know, it's like, there's a few musical artists where if I see something on their Instagram page, like Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms, right? He's one of my favorite singers, one of my favorite bands. They fly pretty low under the radar a lot, but so that way it's just like if I find like if the YouTube algorithm, it'll just kind of serve me up like, oh, here's this thing from 2013. It's like, okay. Will I typically watch more episodes of the thing? I mean, as itself? Not necessarily. So, I mean, I guess if I'm being mercenary about it, I don't find any media format something that I'm going to follow. Like, I don't follow a particular show just because it has more episodes coming out. I don't like, oh, you know, proprietary media formats in generally are just something I don't really have a lot of bandwidth for in my life. It's not something for me as a thing across multiple formats. So I consider myself like I value the podcasting endeavor. For me, it's a very cool way of engaging with the world in a certain way. And it takes a lot of things that I like. It takes a lot of things that I value from an active, you know, let's roll up our sleeves and, you know, kind of build something. And then hopefully other people will add something to it when they engage with it. To really wind down this particular tangent, I just am somebody who has a hard time sitting still when it comes to, you know, media consumption generally. And again, it's just like, if I'm doing something, I want to be listening to music because music is like 40% or more of what my cognitive thing even is. And then, you know, it's like, it's the same thing for my mom with her audiobooks, or it's the same thing with you with these podcasts. I prefer activities where I am involved in the production of something rather than just sort of being the recipient of it, I suppose, except in the case of music where I have no skill or ability or interest in learning to be a musician. I'm strictly a passive recipient in that regard, I suppose. Anyway, dude, I recommend the Ed Nontek podcast, and I recommend Today Who Runs With Tomorrow the World. Strongly.
So, thank you for that. There's your two. I have about eight here. And I put them in alphabetical order, not in order of preference, because it depends on my mood, what my order of preference is.
Okay.
And I float between Big Ideas. It's from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and they bring in experts about whatever. You know, the way you go to some institution and they bring in the expert that's going to do that chat from 7 till 9 on a Wednesday night or whatever. They bring in people like that, but it's bigger.
Yep.
In Our Time is fantastic. It's Melvin Bragg with the BBC. He brings in experts and they talk about all these random topics. And they bring in three academics on whatever that topic is. And then they talk about it, and he keeps them in line. I have never seen academics be forced to toe the line to just talk about those specific things. Like, there's boundaries for what he lets them get into. It's so nice.
Awesome.
Let's Make A is something I really enjoy. It's three comedians. It's from the CBC, and they started with, let's make a sci-fi. So they made a sci-fi story, and then audio recorded it to be a TV. Then they did a rom-com. Now they're doing a horror movie, right? And it's the structures of how to do this, who do we talk to, what do we have to analyze? Because writing looks really simple, right? I read all the time, right? How tough can writing be? And it's really hard to be good. It's really easy to be rubbish, but it's really hard to be good. They go into that. Then we have patented, where it just talks about the history of invention. And they bring in an expert, and they talk about, here's what's going on. The Happiness Lab, sometimes I'm just down. And the Happiness Lab gives me tricks cool. and hints and says, it's okay. Like my misophonia, I learned that from the Happiness Lab. I now know what that is.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
It's, they say somewhere between 18 and 21% of the population have a problem with, like, get really annoyed and disturbed by certain noises. Oh. Like sometimes when you talk to somebody and they're eating with their mouth open, that chomp noise, that drives me bonkers. And so 1/5 of the population roughly has a similar thing. And it's not just that, like different people have the different noises that set them off. But I didn't realize why I got so annoyed. And it was like, okay, no, this is an actual condition. This is the way my brain is wired. It's not me being a jerk or me having no patience. And
it's a neurodiversity.
Yeah, that is exactly it. They also have some other little tips, and it's somebody from, I think it's Harvard. She hosts it, and it's how to stop your phone from being so attractive to you. And it was like, here, put it on grayscale. And I put my phone on grayscale. So there's no colors other than black, white, and gray. And my goodness, I am less motivated to pick that up. I am less motivated to check it because the color is just.
Now, Doug, you also, in terms of neurodiversity, have certain visual, you know.
Yep.
So for you, that's maybe a more significant enterprise even than just say for the, the main streak, the neuro non-divergent.
Yeah. Okay.
Sensorily like, you know what I mean?
I think I do. Yes.
I'm trying to be diplomatic, dude. I don't want to like,
yeah, well,
we all have abilities. We all see things in a different way and it's wonderful. And some of us, yeah. Anyway,
it reminds me of the Incredibles, that animated movie.
I'm aware
the bad
of
guy was named Syndrome, and he's like, when everybody's special, no one is. I just love that quote.
I like the fact you have the debaters in this list.
The debaters? I really enjoy the debaters because to be a comedian and what the debaters is from the CBC, and they always joke about being from the CBC because the audience, of course, is going to be a bunch of gray hairs and stuff. But it's two comedians, they get a topic, and one argues for, one argues against, and then they make jokes out of it, obviously. Because
Tom Collins, the main comedian for that, right?
No, Stephen. Shoot, what's his name?
It's okay. Not Tom Collins. Never mind then. But I remember, like, that's so. We're talking about podcast. You're talking about that in list of podcasts. See, yeah. For me, I go back to a certain time when I was in my earlier 20s. I was just kind of working at a call center and whatnot for a few years. And sort of during that sort of time where I was just kind of floating around before kind of becoming an educator, I just, you know, living in a, you know, apartment, whatever, kind of. And I really enjoyed a lot listening to just whatever was on daytime CBC, right? Because my shift at the call center might not start until the nighttime or whatever. So I just like float around my apartment, you know, just do writing or whatever. Didn't really know what the hell I was doing. But, you know, it's just like sometimes you can turn on the radio and just be like carried away by that voice there. So I certainly have a strong affinity and feelings for the CBC growing up, somewhat, because my parents just kind of threw it on when I was a kid, I remember. And then as a younger person, as a younger adult, it's sort of like, wow, this is something that we actually have as a nation that is kind of cool, you know, as an enterprise. So anytime some of these wingnut right-wing politicians come in and like, we have to axe it, or we have to privatize the crap out of it, or whatever. Just like, just stop throwing red meat to your base, you wingnut. Just like, leave it alone. Leave the gosh dang friggin' CDC alone. And in fact, give more money to it. So anyway, the debaters is rad.
Yes. It's Steve Patterson is the current host.
There we go. Thank you. Sorry, person who I mentioned before.
No problem. Now, one thing, I'm going to get on that soapbox for a second. I see the CBC the same way I see the ABC in Australia and the BBC in Britain. They're services. They are not businesses.
Right.
Nobody expects the police department to make money. Nobody expects 100%. The fire department to make money. Nobody expects the crews that go out and fix the roads to make money. That's
the
Coast
Guard, whatever. Yeah,
it's one of those. It's not a business. Anyway, I'll get off. One of the reasons I put this in is because one of the people that is on occasion on the debaters is a current colleague, and I used to share an office with him.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah, his name's Patrick Ledwell. He is such a good guy.
Very cool.
So sharp. And it's interesting to watch him engage with a concept and the way he can look at it differently to get wherever he's going out of it. Anyway, all of these things, I realized that as I listen to them, and I just go through, right? I click them, whatever, from day to day. They're all about learning for me. Every one of these is about learning. And I didn't realize that this was part of my lifelong learning goal, right? I keep learning. And I know that some of the stuff that I've said in these podcasts that we've done, I have taken from one of these. I have absolutely gone into what they have said and said, okay, how can I apply that to our situation? So if anybody wants, they can go to the website, and all of them are listed there with links to their websites. I think they're all worth it.
Definitely.
My biggest disappointment is patented just got canceled, or patented just got canceled, but they still have a couple of hundred episodes there. So I still have years of listening to do. So anyway, that's
sick. That is a sick list. I predict that this is something we can probably revisit from time to time as well. Sort of a recurring thing, you know, like State of the podcast episode, right?
Something. Oh, yeah. And I have more dramatic ones that I've listened to, but they're like 9 episodes and done. Like, if you ever get a chance to listen to Solar, it's about this spaceship. They go to examine something on the sun, whatever the story is. I'm not normally the big dramatic person, but this sucked me in.
Whoa.
This was unreal how good it was. And so, but it was 9 or 10 episodes and it's done now. Because it tells a story. It was almost that English version, right? It's like, yeah, each season is 6 episodes, or each season is 3 episodes, whatever it happens to be.
One podcast that I'm saying I don't follow. One that I did find interesting that was not music related, which is unusual for me. So, I mean, again, my media consumption is like, mainly about music, and then everything else kind of gets let in grudgingly. But one thing from actually only about a year and a half ago, probably, so relatively recent, certainly since we've been doing this show, the Barry and Honey Sherman murders in St. John, right? The billionaire couple that were murdered, and they still... The police, between the police and the family kind of running their own parallel investigation, it's the whole thing got so utterly muddied and muddled from a law enforcement standpoint. Where it's 5, 6, whatever years later, and from all that's been released, they're nowhere closer to finding the person or persons who killed these billionaires in their homes. And so, you know, your true crime with a Canadian standpoint, that's actually from an investigative series by the top investigative journalist for the Toronto Star. So it was like a Toronto Star series of podcasts. So like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 episodes. I think they're on their third series. And in fact, it's a TV show. They turned it into something for Crave. So that's not something where it's like, oh, I'm in the true crime podcast and I'm going to listen to this. It's like, I saw something on the Toronto Star. I go, okay, this is a weird phenomenon. These two, you know, super, super rich connected people being killed in such manner. This is an unusual thing in safe, you know, Canada, whatever. So so as a phenomenon, the podcast was a way to go, oh, they got 9 or 10 episodes about this weirdness. Like, okay, I'll check that out. Again, I'm not going to be just like looking for a podcast episode as such. So again, it sort of speaks to how each of us kind of has our own approach for finding stuff in the media ecosphere and then consuming it or relating to it in such a manner as suits our technology, culture, and momentary imperatives, right?
Yeah. One last thing I want to say before I get to the word, question, and phrase of the podcast is a couple of years ago when we started having conversations about starting this.
Yep.
Since I had already done one years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't particularly scary. It was like, oh, okay. I knew the bare bones of the steps that you had to take, that we had to take to get here. And it felt like grad school when I'm helping people in grad school. It's like, yeah, okay, you got to do this, and then you got to go do that, and then you got to do that. And it's not obvious if you haven't done it before, but once you have done it, it's like, oh, okay, this is the process. And that's why I just wanted to throw that picture in of that old podcast I had done way back when. And thank you to the Apple Development Fund. They were the ones that gave us a couple of $1,000 to buy the podcasts or buy the iPads and do all that stuff.
Positive use of funds by major pet providers. High fives to all concerned, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the word of the podcast is podcasting, because we've mentioned it how many times. Question of the podcast is, what will it take for podcasting to be used regularly in classrooms? And will we ever get there? I would love to have somebody tell me, because I think we've kind of wandered off the path, and maybe it'll come back, but again, maybe it won't. And phrase of the podcast is, the algorithm will serve me up. That's yours. I did not say that, just in case you're wondering.
What I like about that formulation with the, you know, dots, you know, the ellipses at the end, is that from a grammatical construction standpoint, the algorithm will serve me up. It's like, okay, the algorithm will provide me with certain things, but to speak to Marshall McLuhan's "the medium is the message" notion, the algorithm will serve me up. I am using the algorithm for certain things, and so I am making a personal investment of time and personal lived experience with this construct, this technological construct. And so by participating it, by agreeing implicitly to the user agreements and the literacies and cultural norms associated with even using a computer through or device through which to interact with this so-called algorithm, it's like I am myself becoming, through my various outputs, something that the algorithm will then use to propagate itself further and provide search and other kinds of results to other people that I don't even know, based simply on aggregates of my user data bundled in multiple thousands upon exponential thousands of times over vis-a-vis processes and technologies, which I certainly am not going to know more about, because I think a strong contender for the phrase of the podcast might even be, I don't even want to know more about it, or whatever it was you said earlier about, you know, it was you saying that, Doug. It was, you know, yeah. So anyway, yeah, the algorithm, the ongoing existential discussion about the algorithm. We got a fair amount of algorithmic discussion on the Pump Music Show on Today New Brunswick, just because I've downsized a lot of my record collection, as I've discussed. Fortunately, as it turns out, in advance of my job being eliminated, fortunately. So I'm now on a highly digitally forward music consumption thing relative to what I was before, out of a necessity of my environment and situation and setting. And so Dan and I are just all about, well, what's the algorithm serving you up now, right, in terms of music recommendations and whatnot. So anyway, dude, yeah, this is awesome.
So, right on. So that's all I've got.
Cool beans. Well, I'm trying to think if I have anything else besides a need to fill this coffee cup again. And I'm supposing not. So I guess probably this will be coming out later today. Part of my new, you know, I have all this time. I have all this time ahead of me now. And as part of that, I actually have given some amount of thought to, A, getting the podcast out in a more regular and timely manner, which is important. But I actually think that there may be an opportunity here to sort of start digging in to some of these 50 plus, 55, whatever episodes worth of metadata and experience and whatever else, and sort of start thinking about how to serve that up in terms of like an OER or a book manuscript or something. So things to look forward to.
Right on.
Appreciate you all. Take care. Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Bye, everybody.